We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Breaking down the 2024 rookie class from rookie drafts, the best ball, the tiers, all of it. That's what we're talking about today on Stealing Bananas. I'm Ben Gretsch. You can find the Stealing Signals newsletter at bengretsch.substack.com. With me, as always, is Sean Siegel. You can find all of his fantastic work, including obviously tremendous work on the prospects over at RotoViz. We talk about that all the time. Right after the draft, Sean, you released your update. Not right after the draft. You had an update, I think, right after the draft as well. But a few days later, it's not like outdated or anything, but it's the top 50 rookies, how to play rookie drafts. There's tiers, there's trade back options. It's an awesome piece. I've referred to it during my rookie drafts multiple times. I've gotten questions about it because I get questions for Sean. It's my favorite thing.
I always feel so bad about that. Ben's like, I'm getting a lot of questions on your ranking of this player. I'm like, well...
What's Sean thinking? I'm like, I'm not Sean. I'm not in his head. But no, we're going to talk through that. What are you thinking about some of this stuff? But really what we're seeing in all of our drafts, you are in a number of FFPC triflex leagues with a lot of different co-managers, one with me, Blair, one with Calm, your co-host over at RotoViz Overtime, several others, RotoViz guys, our buddy Pat Corain. You have a number of teams over there, and you've compiled what you're seeing across all of your rookie drafts into a document that I can see, and so now we're gonna chat about some of that stuff. We're also in some leagues against each other, some industry leagues, and I have some other dynasty leagues and all those things. It's fascinating, I think, Sean, this year, because there seems to be some like tiers that are really crystallizing. The tier breaks are maybe a little bit different. There's like a little bit of these transitions, but it seems very clear what people think about the top, say, four, and then the, you know, top four prospects, and then you have like five, six, seven, eight is somewhere in there. You're starting to get into like a tier break. Certainly after about the 110, 111 point, there's like a significant drop off, and then I think everyone acknowledges that like somewhere in there you've now moved way down from where you were at maybe even just 108 a minute ago, certainly down from 104. And then you get into the second round, you got another little bit of a tier break in there, and mid second round there's like a little bit of one, and then there's like a long group, I think, from the, like the late second, this is like in super flex tight end premium type thing, but from the late second well into the third, you start to get into some of those day three running back profiles that are kind of intriguing, that probably pull up into the sort of less intriguing second round pick tier. And so that tier, like those running backs are often going in the third round, but you can kind of say that this is like one long big group. And so it's interesting. I've seen fewer trades in my dynasty rookie drafts this year, I think, than I ever have. It seems like it's harder to move around because everyone sort of agrees where some of the breaks are. And so when people are trying to come up, this is the last guy of a tier for me, everyone seems to agree. One person who doesn't always seem to agree is you when you go over to your top 50 rookies, which we all love about the Sean Siegel approach, because you are not afraid to have conviction in a lot of your stuff. And there are some really interesting players in terms of how you're approaching some of the tier breaks and where you're looking at some of the things. But I haven't seen, and I'm not saying that you have massive disagreements. You don't either. But I haven't seen really significant disagreements around the market and with a lot of the different people I'm talking about. Are you sensing that as well? You're in more drafts than me. Are you sensing similar? Are you seeing less trade arounds? I've had people try to trade up with me and the value has never been there. And a lot of the times, because it's so clearly like, oh, well, I'm trading out of a tier here. And so I would need something sort of significant in addition, like a third round pick or something, you know, like something that's actually worth me trading out of this tier in the second round. And I know it seems crazy to some people, like, well, you're only trading back like 4 or 5 slots in the second round. You also want a third round pick. But when you're, you know, in agreement that you're trading out of a tier, that kind of a move needs to be made. And then it becomes difficult to agree on that valuation because a person trading up maybe doesn't want to make that. Are you sensing a similar thing there where there's a lot of agreement and it's maybe leading to less movement in rookie drafts?
That's a really interesting question. And I think I'll have to answer it in parts. And partly what we're hoping to do with this episode, Ben, we spent some time chatting before we got on, obviously. But working through the players, and I think, you know, once we get a lot of feedback from the community, then we can take that and wrap it back in with our thoughts as well. Obviously, a lot of listeners are going to be drafting throughout the summer. Not everybody is drafting in huge volume like this past weekend with the FFPC, and we know that, you know, people want to prepare for those drafts. There's also an element where you have some reflection back and forth with the best ball drafting. And you and I had a lot of fun doing the 3 drafts last week. And that was an absolute blast. And you see some insights there that kind of work back and forth. But also, you know, once we get into these drafts, as you mentioned, it is fascinating to see how people are playing them, what trade opportunities are available. And for me, one of the things I like to think through is this idea of how can you use the structure of a rookie draft, similarly to the things we've talked about, you know, for a decade with the structure of, you know, redraft. How do you beat the main event? With the structure of best ball, how do you structurally draft so that you have an outsized chance to beat the field? You know, maybe even if your player selections aren't absolutely perfect, because we know we're not going to be perfect with the player selections. And so one of the things that you mentioned here that I think is so interesting is this idea of like, where can you get the backs? And what does that mean for the early backs too? There's a lot of talk about this being a weak running back class. And you see guys like Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson going in that, say, 110 to 203 range, which I do think is appropriately priced. That's about where I have them. And yet, and Pat and I did take Brooks at the 112, which was an interesting pick because Brian Thomas was also available there. So I think you have a high-end potential outcome with the top guy. But it's also a class that, because of where you're going to be able to take so many of those players, if you've stockpiled a lot of picks, and we talk a lot about the benefits of stockpiling picks because they give you a lot of leverage in a draft, and then you can move back out of them and keep that sort of pick machine going. If you're on the clock in the second round of your drafts, for example, and you have 4 second round picks and someone offers you a round 2 and a round 3 from next year to move out of it, then you can do that because you can still get your guys with those other 2 or 3 picks. If you just have the one, then you have a need and you have to address it and you can never really get that going. And so that's one of the reasons that we want to do perpetual reloading specifically within the rookie drafts. I mean, that's the point where everybody is engaged and you can really get value out of it. Where, you know, once the rookie draft is done, then, I mean, even in pretty engaged leagues with high stakes, I mean, these leagues that we're going to be talking about today have very good payouts, right? So people are not ignoring these leagues or going completely dormant, but this is your chance in a very real way until we get, you know, into August. And so you want to make sure you take advantage of that. But I'm wondering, as we kind of get to this question that you asked, if you think there is a huge difference between maybe what I'm seeing where I have or tend to have so many picks in each draft versus maybe a more normal distribution of picks throughout the drafts. You asked about what I'm seeing. I don't see a ton of trades in my leagues that I'm not directly involved in.
Yeah. And maybe that's why I'm asking, because that's what I've noticed with our moves in our Dynasty League together. And you're typically the one manning the phones and managing the trades for us. We had, I'm just looking at it now. We had a first round pick. We had 3 seconds, four thirds. Did we trade any of that? I think I think almost in every rookie draft we've done together, we've moved around quite a bit. I think we wound up taking all of our normal picks.
We did
at their spots.
Sure. Yeah,
we just made all the picks. But it's interesting you say that, because when you do have a lot of firepower like that, that's interesting. It's a great point. It's the major benefit of that. I noticed that in a different league, the 103. It's a league that you have to start two tight ends. It's best ball. There's some other layers to it, super flex as well, where I think Brock Bowers makes it a tier of five instead of a tier of four. It seems like the top four, Marvin Harrison, Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels, in most formats, and this, well, certainly super flex formats, but whether it's tight end premium or not and all those types of things, that's the big four that is agreed on in most leagues. But the point I was just driving home, we moved from 103 to 105 because we kind of wanted Bowers in this two tight end format anyway and felt like he was a part of that group. But having a lot of pick flexibility allowed that to happen. We ended up moving up in the second round into a higher tier from 212 up to 205 and got additional late round pick value that also helped offset the fact that we traded out of Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels, who are both, you know, very, very strong prospects. A fourth round pick, a sixth round pick, and a trade up in the fifth. It was a bunch of like late stuff, and it's a team that needs a lot of pieces. So it was nice to get a lot more picks. But that was the one league where I got a lot of value. I mean, I had the flexibility because of the picks. It's harder. There's certain leagues where I've wanted to move around, and you look at it and you're like, oh man, I traded the fourth round pick in this league, and I really need a fourth round pick as part of a package to then move back up into the fifth round and make the rest of it work. And so then maybe I offer a future fourth or something, and then that gets declined because people are like, well, I don't want to move my third round pick into a future fourth. And I'm like, I don't really just want to take a third this year for a future third. If I'm also moving back in, so it becomes a lot easier to negotiate when you have all those picks. I've noticed that for sure. I mean, I think that's an interesting point.
And I have a league I'm doing by myself where the players came off the board in a really crazy order, but I had traded my first round pick in this draft. And it's something that I don't usually do, but I got in 3 seconds spread across a couple of years. And I don't know they were directly the picks, but having a lot of seconds in last year's draft had allowed me to get Sam Laporta and Rashee Rice. And those players have, you know, zoomed up in terms of where they go in dynasty startups. And so even when you lose that future first, you gain a lot of value back. But the problem is just that once you're no longer in that first round, you know, how are you going to get to any of those guys when they fall? This is a draft where Adunze goes ahead of Nabers. It's a draft where McCarthy goes ahead of Bowers. May goes at the 109. You can't get to any of those picks if you are not in there moving down as all of this is happening.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
That's exactly right. And since we have started this episode, just jumping right into some of the very dynasty-specific you know, mechanisms of how you navigate a rookie draft and all that. I do just want to say, I mean, our plan today is to talk a lot about these rookies, the profiles themselves. I think the dynasty stuff is really interesting, but for a lot of the players, Sean, it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe that guy's a little bit more interesting in dynasty. Maybe that guy's a little bit less interesting in dynasty relative to redraft. We had an interesting conversation about the third round running backs. Will Shipley, we don't love the landing spot. I'm terrified about the running back receptions. That was something we loved about his profile. It's one of my biggest disappointments from the draft that he landed with the Eagles. And you were mentioning he's maybe a little bit shinier in dynasty, which I agree with, because there's a lot of things that can happen with the roster over multiple years. And if he's a good player, maybe the workload with the receptions build in a different way. Maybe over years, Jalen Hurts becomes more, you know, less of a runner and more of a straight drop back passer, which we see with some mobile quarterbacks. And, you know, the way that mobile quarterbacks age is still something that, you know, the rise of the mobile quarterbacks is more recent. It's not fully determined the way that they're going to age. Maybe that will be something that is very common with mobile quarterbacks, that they have to evolve in a certain way or what have you. The other player on the flip side that we were discussing was Kamani Vidal.
That's what I think it is from listening to a variety of sources, but I would not guarantee it.
Yeah. But he, you mentioned, maybe a little less shiny in dynasty relative to redraft. He had the fantastic landing spot with the Chargers. It was a sixth round draft capital, though. He went like 8 or 9 running backs after Shipley in the reality draft. I mean, you can't just completely ignore draft capital. So there's going to be my point here with those examples. There's going to be little adjustments if you're only a best ball player or only a redraft player. And having said that, these rookie values, and as we talk about them in dynasty, they do port over to redraft really strongly, because one of the big things that I've noticed in dynasty over the last few years, and I'm not the dynasty expert, Sean, I always say that I'm not the biggest dynasty fan. I like when I make mistakes in drafts to not have to be stuck with them for the next 5 years or 3 years or until I can find a trade partner. You know, the ownership of the bad decisions that, you know, I don't want to have that.
That's why you have to love the RV triflex, because with the cut downs, you just cut those guys.
You just have to cut them and move on. We had to cut Sky Moore this year in our RV triflex. It is. I do really like that. The 20 man cut downs do require you to let go of the guys that in the 30 man leagues that I'm in, I'm like, God, I have to stare at that guy for the next 5 years and hope that something happens. But the big thing that I've learned over these last few years has been a thing that you've emphasized to me. I want to give our buddy Pat Corain a lot of credit. He's mentioned it, especially in Superflex with respect to the quarterback values. And it's the idea of thinking about the rookies in terms of trade value, because it is really important how they get there. It's not just about whether or not you think they're going to be good long-term. Like Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the big example for this year. I still have a lot of faith in him. I think you do as well. Really rough rookie year, and the market has really fallen on him. So if you like him, you can't trade him now, because you definitely value him more than basically anyone else is going to. And you're kind of going to ride that to zero. I was trying to trade as sort of a throw-in for Rondale Moore from one of our buddies in an industry league. And I was like, you know, he's kind of a fun little throw-in here. And I think I probably could have got him, but this person didn't necessarily want to just throw him in. And I have Rondale Moore in some leagues as well, where I'm the same way. It's like, I still think that guy's good. He's in Atlanta now. Like, they're going to use him in interesting ways. Like, it's really hard when you know, really liked the profile early. You're always going to be ahead of his market, even as it just keeps falling up. The reason I'm using Moore as an example is it's multiple years out from even where JSN is, and it's continued to fall. I did this with LaVisca Chenault. I did this with Sky Moore. I've done this with so many players where their value just keeps falling and I still stay ahead of market the whole way. And so now I have an asset that can't be moved and it's just stuck on my roster.
But I think the listeners, before you go on, they want to know if your Rondale Moore league is like a 40-man, 45-man roster.
It's only 30-man, but it is, you know, it's best ball. The dome element. Sean, he's gonna have some best ball spike weeks for the Falcons this year. They're going to be using him in some motion. They're going to use him in some 2-2 Atwell ways, as I'm confident. He's a good 20th round pick in best ball, or I guess 18th round now that I was taking him in the 20th round in the pre-draft underdog drafts, but
still one of the most athletic players in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, they can scheme him up for some stuff in a dome, right? I hope. I think. But those types of players, the point being, you have to think about trade value, market value, how people are going to respond to immediate production. Because the flip side of it is, when a guy is a hit his rookie year, the trade value skyrockets, right? And it's massive. I was just looking at a league where I took Jahmyr Gibbs over CJ Stroud, a super flex league last year. And I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs is awesome and his value has gone up, but obviously in a super flex league, I'm really bummed that I don't have CJ Stroud. It's probably the startup 101 right now. I mean, when you hit on something like that in 1 year, the trade value is a huge increase. And the point that I'm driving home is, whether you think about rookies in terms of dynasty or redraft or anything, well, I guess when we discuss them in terms of dynasty, we are both valuing significantly what people are going to think about them 1 year from now, because that is really, really important. It's not just whether or not they're going to be stars 3 or 5 years from now, which I think a lot of people think of dynasty on these long, long timelines that aren't really practical in terms of what actually exists in your league and how you should actually play dynasty. So stick with us if you're not a huge dynasty guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And another good example of that is Marvin Mims, who the Broncos are like, yeah, he's going to be awesome. We just couldn't, quite work him into the lineup last year. And we're like, well, you didn't have a great team, and so you've already burned that guy. I mean, he has no value, and there's the possibility that he still breaks out in year two, but I mean, you want to avoid the Marvin Mims pick if you can. Now, the thing with Mims is that I think that pick made sense, and so you can't always avoid these. You're not going to be perfect with them. But Ben, it is one of the, I think, interesting things that we're seeing right now in terms of how, say, I think there are five guys who were significantly overdrafted at receiver, and it has helped the valuations for all of them, but not necessarily in the exact same way. You have Xavier Leggett, Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, Jalen Polk, all of those guys with huge red flags on their resumes, but the NFL teams, specifically those five NFL teams, said that they liked them. But you can look at the immediate opportunity, and whether it's with Pearsall where he's blocked, or it's with Polk where people don't know who the quarterback is going to be, certainly with Leggett when you have Bryce Young, that has been a very different reaction than what you're getting with Coleman and McConkey.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating because, Keon Coleman, for example, is a guy, I don't want to speak for you, but sort of for me, my lesson from everything I was just saying is that I have to be willing to draft a guy like Keon Coleman in Dynasty, where in past years, I just wasn't. And I always took the stand on the player whose profile I liked more and completely faded landing spot. And that was that's been valuable. That was a big lesson from like AJ Brown and some of those things, where AJ Brown wasn't blocked, but people didn't like the landing spot. He went from, we've talked about this on the show before, and I had people sort of disagree with me on an AJ Brown comparison in recent months. And I had a tweet recently. So I just want to clarify, all I'm saying is the value change, which is pre-draft AJ Brown was 102 for a lot of people in that class. Then he landed with the Titans in the second round. And he was going about like 10th in rookie drafts. He fell a massive amount. A lot of guys came swarming above him. So that's why everyone goes back to the AJ Brown analogy. It's not, and obviously every situation is its own, but the point with AJ Brown is his pre-draft profile and his post-draft, purely from the combination of draft capital and landing spot, his post-draft valuation were significantly different because people didn't think the Titans were going to ever throw enough. Back then they were a complete Derrick Henry offense. They threw the ball at the lowest rate of any team in the NFL. And there's a huge lesson there, and it's not just to a degree. It's the lesson that landing spot is often overrated, that if a player is good enough over a long timeline, you're going to see that. We saw that with AJ Brown relatively quickly. We saw this his rookie year, and he continued to be undervalued going into year two, and then he continued to smash, and now obviously he's a superstar, goes in the first round and redraft every year, et cetera. But that's not the only thing, and especially as you start to get into the second round, into the third round, there are profiles that I have faded in the past that they won the landing spot lotto, and I want to be more open to that. I want to be more available. So Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman are great examples of that. Their profiles I had questions about. McConkey less so for me. You and I have talked about how he didn't play a lot, But I like to look at the per route run stuff. And he's pretty good at earning volume as a prospect when he was actually healthy and on the field. And that's, I mean, nobody's going to be this year's Puka Nacua, but that's sort of the point of like the Puka Nacua thing. When I look back at the after the fact targets per out run profile and say, well, I mean, this is a guy who didn't play a lot in college, or didn't run enough routes, but when he was out there, he earned volume. And if he gets put in a spot where they have a lot of targets, he can maybe be really good. Ladd McConkey lands in a spot where a team invested a really high draft pick on him and has a lot of available opportunity. And he's tied to a really good quarterback. And yes, they're going to probably throw a decent amount, but each of his 3 years in college on small routes shares, he earned enough volume in good offenses alongside Brock Bowers that I'm intrigued by his ability to consolidate volume. So even though I have a whole bunch of other questions about his overall profile and all that stuff, that immediate on-ramp for a rookie season, it matters both in Dynasty, it matters in best ball, it matters across the board, it matters in redraft. I don't know what the like ultimate ceiling is for a guy like him or for Keon Coleman, very similar, right? But I do think that, you know, there's landing spot adjustments that have to be made.
As we're talking about McConkey, it does interest me as well the redraft implications of some of those things that you're saying. And especially now when we have DJ Chark and we have, you know, the arguably undervalued slash just a guy slash someone who can actually take some legitimate NFL targets in Joshua Palmer. And then you have this element with Quentin Johnston potentially taking a step forward, even if we give that a much lower likelihood based on the historical patterns for first round rookies that bust to that extreme. Are we going to get to a point here, especially with what we expect the, you know, pass run rate to be for the Chargers, where the amount of volume, specifically in year one, because I think that partly people are expecting guys like Palmer and Chark and Johnston to go away, and it's going to open up eventually, and maybe, you know, 2025, it's McConkey and then whoever else they bring in, right? They still have to add. Well, from a dynasty perspective, whoever they add in the future is going to knock you down some. But from a redraft perspective, especially if we're talking about McConkey as a guy who doesn't always run the full route, not really compliment, but is not out there every play, is the volume actually there for him that people are assuming?
I think that's a really fair question for his situation specifically. I think Joshua Palmer's actually a really good pick in like best ball right now. He had far and away his best season in a per out basis in his third year last year. He's a guy that I've not been a fan of because he's been really poor the first 2 years in terms of like yards per out run and that stuff. It's basically just routes, but not impressing on those routes. Like the reason that his name is out there is basically just route volume because of injuries to Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and no depth at receiver for the Chargers for all those years. But last year they bring in a first round receiver in Quentin Johnston who also struggled, or who did struggle. Josh Palmer significantly outplayed him on sort of a per route basis. And then you lose Mike Williams right away. Again, he's gotten a lot of this opportunity purely off injuries in front of him and a lack of depth there. And so it's just route volume more so than elite per route production. But his yards per target jumped a bunch. His ability to earn the volume, targets per out run jumped a bunch as well. His yards per out run as a result jumped a ton from his first two seasons, easily his best season in his third year. And he has the sort of incumbent advantage. He has the most familiarity rapport built with Justin Herbert of any of these guys. Quentin Johnston also was there last year, but didn't really do enough to where we can be like, they have a lot of familiarity. But I agree with you. I think Quentin Johnson's also very viable to draft. And we've joked about how, you know, him crushing Jim Harbaugh in the college football playoff matters. It's really interesting to think through that passing game and the overall volume that's going to be there. I do think with them taking McConkey in the early second and not addressing receiver again until the seventh round, and with Quentin Johnson struggles as a rookie and with Josh Palmer's overall profile, you are in a position where the range of outcomes for McConkey is certainly favorable. You have to consider, like when we start talking about the dynasty stuff, you have to consider the ability for him to gain a lot of value quickly. And then you could just trade him if you think that they're going to draft another running back next year. But that's sort of the point, is it's a lot easier to trade a guy coming off a good year than it is coming off a bad year and trying to convince people that he's good. But McConkey and Coleman are two of those guys. As I was opening up and we were talking about these sort of pretty clear tiers, it's like, I've seen McConkey go 110, and particularly ahead of like Brian Thomas there. Typically the top 10, or who else did I see him go ahead of? Brian Thomas, and I guess, oh, Bo Nix is the other one that goes in the top 10, and you have ranked in the top 10, and we're going to talk about in Superflex certainly belongs in that discussion. But basically that 110 to 203 range you discussed, when you start to get the running backs involved there, it's like you're outside of the top quarterbacks. Like Drake May is gone, JJ McCarthy's gone. You're outside of, like, Brock Bowers is gone. You know, Roma Dunze has gone at this point. And now you're in the McConkey and Keon Coleman tier, but they're going to go before that next tier in almost every draft. I don't think I've seen Coleman or McConkey go later than that sort of next group of receivers. Although I'm looking at your table here, there is one league where Keon Coleman slid a little bit, went behind Adonai Mitchell. But just, I mean, that next tier of receivers, Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, Ricky Pearsall, where people are, Leggett and Pearsall get the first round draft capital as well, but people are less convinced about the combination of profile and landing spot. Like for McConkey, I can go, well, even if the volume's not there, like he has Justin Herbert, the sheer volume because of Quentin Johnson and Josh Palmer, I think the volume's still going to be there to a degree, like almost no matter what. Like there's scales of this, and they don't have enough other options to not play their early second round wide receiver quite a bit this year. It's very similar to Leggett in that regard. Pearsall's different. They do have enough depth. If they don't trade an Ayuk or a Deebo Samuel, he might not play a whole lot. That's a different, you know, a different conversation. But the difference between Leggett and McConkey is if they play McConkey a decent amount, you feel pretty good about Justin Herbert's ability to get the ball to him. In Leggett's side of things, you're like, man, I don't even know if Bryce Young's going to be able to throw the ball that, you know, well enough to get him the ball. And so there's scales to this, but I think McConkey and Coleman make sense in that little tier break above those other questionable profiles that you mentioned. But it is really interesting then to consider the profiles that we really like. See, the mistake I would have made in the past is just to go after like a Troy Franklin ahead of some of these guys and say, I really liked that profile, and ignore the fact that he went in the fourth round. And he needs to go behind these guys who got the draft capital, have the buy-in, are going to play early. So anyway, I mean, there are question marks for the profiles. The questions you raised about McConkey, I think, are very interesting. But I don't know. I guess that feels clear to me, the little mini tier breaks in there. And I think it's right the way that it's going.
I agree. I think those tier breaks are correct. That's where I have them ranked. One of the things that you can do, and we talk about this element of understanding the upcoming season and what that's going to do to the trade value. If enough managers or the right managers are already pricing that in, like, don't take the risk. Go ahead and bank that right now. So for me, my favorite move, if you've gotten a lot of round two picks, and you can even do this if you have a pick in that sort of, you know, 110 to 112 range, and you're not completely set on those guys, and you don't need a Jonathan Brooks, he doesn't fit, you can move back some. But the best play, I think, right now is to trade the slot that McConkey and Coleman go in. So the 201 to the 203, with the exception of a few times where, as you mentioned, McConkey will go even earlier than that. You trade that simply for the 2025 round one pick, and in some cases, a little bit extra, right? Because the other thing that you can do is think through, like, just how good would they have to be to actually justify a pick that, I mean, it could end up that you're going to pick up the 110 to 112 next year, and it may be worth less. So there's some risk there. But one part of it is that when you have a pick instead of a player, the pick can be traded to anybody. So the flexibility that you get in future trades, say if you're heading toward the trade deadline in your league and you need to pick up a veteran to make the push, if you have a pick as opposed to a particular player, a lot more flexibility. But the other thing is that that pick could fall in the 105, 106, it could fall at the 101. And then I think it's extremely unrealistic to think that McConkey or Coleman will play so well that they would justify that type of selection next year. Now, maybe that's not true, but I look at Coleman. He's fascinating to me in that, I mean, he ran one of the best gauntlets ever. So that's always kind of fun. But in the SIS numbers, 2.0 yards per route last year, that's not going to match up with what everybody's seeing in the PFF stuff necessarily. But to put some context to that, that is behind Jaheim Bell and a full yard behind Johnny Wilson, who goes late in the draft to the Philadelphia Eagles as a pretty savvy pick for them. Right. Now, I don't want to be overwhelmingly hypocritical about it. The yards per route numbers for Xavier Worthy were not fantastic this last year either. But that's in a situation for me where he's competing with Mitchell. He's competing with Jatavion Sanders, who actually had the best yards per route of those three guys. And Worthy has the extremely strong track record. He's already built the prospect profile. Whereas Coleman, even though he did have a stronger season the previous year at Michigan State, really hasn't. And if you haven't done that, then that's tricky. Now, Coleman is very young and he's very big. And so there are certainly some elements to his profile where, especially after the Bills say, this is our guy, that I don't question anybody who wants him in that area. And also, when I'm trading out of those picks in almost every league, it is with a certain amount of anxiety that I am going to miss on somebody who helps other managers. And if I have a pretty low exposure, it's going to hurt me sort of across the board, right? You have to be willing to accept that and think that just broadening your overall risk, broadening your overall, the number of paths that you have because you have picks instead of a player, is still going to be better for you in the long run than tying yourself down to guys who are very risky. But I like those guys in that range. And I think that they very well could hit. And there is a tier break after them. And then, Ben, the kind of fun part is, you mentioned Troy Franklin. If you prefer Mitchell, if you prefer Legette, and if you prefer Franklin, you can then trade down because people still will give you something if you're willing to go beyond a tier break. And so that's kind of where you can make your stand. You can say, yeah, I still actually do prefer Franklin. And the great thing about it is he doesn't cost as much. And so now I can get him, and I also can get more pick value sometime in the future because I'm willing to go ahead and make that decision. And that'll do it for this episode of Stealing Bananas Shorts. We hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, if you want the full audio, that will come out next. I'm Sean. With me is Ben. You can follow him at Yards Per Gretch. Make sure you sign up for Stealing Signals, for Stealing Lines, for Stealing Signals Gold. I love the gold title on anything there. We'd love to have you guys over RotoViz, coupon code RVRadio2024 at checkout. If it sounds like I'm doing it a little bit faster, that's because, Ben, this is our third outro that we are recording at the 250 mark of the full episode. But the outro is important, so we do want you to sign up for those things. I mean, if you love us, if you don't care, then don't sign up. We love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.